Okay. There's one. should I start?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I added a couple more slides after the last class to talk about the stuff that I discussed in the class, but I didn't have slides for. This is basically the transition systems perspective where you keep states as if they are black boxes. And then this basically shows that an action in the transition diagram is just a state-to-state matrix. And that's something that we discussed last time too. And then this is the problems with the transition direct explicit representation and why state variable representation is better. All of this I discussed last time, but I didn't have slides. So I just basically put that there. And I used the board last time. Okay. Any questions on anything we talked about last time? So if you looked at the textbook, they talk about actions with adds and delete lists. And I have only talked about actions with effects. Right? Oh, actually no, in fact these guys also give. Oh, so that's good. So they also have preconditions and effects. The one thing that I should mention is in many treatments of planning tend to have preconditions, adds, and deletes. Okay? That's actually even now, in fact, in many, there's a standard language for writing your domain descriptions called PGDL. And most planners, most implemented planners, if they take action descriptions in PDDL, and they normally have, I mean, in PDDL you can actually declare both adds and deletes for actions. And the difference really is that any negative effect is written as a delete, and any positive effect is written as an add. And I actually much prefer the effect, direct effect representation, because, you know, for what I said last time, which is there's really nothing sacrosanct about what is positive, what is negative. You could have negative goals, and there's nothing wrong with it. Okay. So I actually wound up discussing the progression as well as regression directly in terms of effects rather than adds and deletes. Okay. So if you ever look at adds and deletes, you can always convert it back to effects. Any questions at all? Okay. So last class we looked at two simple ways of doing search on the space of states. You can go forward using progression. You can go backward using regression. And we looked at some reasons why progression might be good, some reasons why regression might be good, and sort of ended by saying really what matters is what sort of guidance you have, what kind of heuristic guidance you have, okay? And so that's more or less where we start today and start talking about if I'm doing search either in this or in this, and I'm stuck with some bunch of children nodes in front of me, which one do I expand? Okay, so much of what you wind up doing in search is you have a bunch of children states and you need to expand one of them. And the one that is likely to go towards goal is the one that you want to expand. So the question is, how do you define heuristics for this? And in fact, most of today's class is really about how to define heuristics for planning. And to sort of motivate why I'm spending like so much time on heuristics is the following. The algorithms, the progression and regression search that I described to you last time have been around forever, at least since like 60s, okay? And then this is, the problem is that search sucked. I mean, people didn't know how to really do large plans. They were not able to generate large enough plans. And remember, this was the cheapest, simplest planning problem we are talking about. This is the deterministic planning problem that we are talking about, right? Deterministic planning with point-wise actions and so on and so forth. And this is a picture that was generated around 1990 something. You have been born, most of you have been born by that time. And all they were showing at that time is, all they were showing at that time is, of course, you generate your own planner and you talk about how your planner is faster than somebody else's planner. Okay, so this is the soccer planner and this is your planner, and notice that your planner is growing much slower than the other guys. And it, those are the happy curves that you always want to produce. The interesting question is, look at the x-axis, the number of goals that these planners are actually able to generate. And this, I believe, is some sort of a rocket domain, where the idea is you have a bunch of rockets and you have a bunch of packages, and you need to take packages from one place to another place using rockets. So it's like, again, another toy domain. And the kinds of number of goals that they have in this simple domain were like 1, 2, 3, 4. By the time of 5, you're going, the number of CPU seconds are increasing like crazy. Okay. Now, if you look at planners right now, using the same sort of progression and regression, the main difference that you would see is you can actually generate much larger scale plans. You can now generate 100 action plans under minutes. Okay. Now, remember that when you increase the length of the solution, the complexity of search increases how? Exponentially, because length is the depth in the search tree. And if you want a higher depth tree in the higher depth solution, then in general you're doing B power D. So for even one little increase, so there are planners which can perform, I mean, in general, in any search algorithm, something which can do a 15 step solution can just die on 16 step problem. There is no grace. You know, you just die, you know, basically because you're doing exponentially larger. And so now we are talking about, this actually is a representation of, I believe, of a Munich airport and how flights are taking off and how the various runways are allotted and so on. I wouldn't even go into the specific domain description here, other than to say that notice that the x-axis is much larger, and these are the number of tasks, and I think the plans corresponding to the later ones are as high as several hundred steps. Okay, that's the big difference that has happened between planning in the last several years. And so it's worth understanding exactly what happened, what were the heuristics that are so interesting. And it turns out that those heuristics are actually very easy. Okay, and one of the interesting things in combinatorics, I mean, these are problems like planning, problems like constraint satisfaction, all these are combinatorics problems, right? And one of the interesting things that happened in AI in general is that in the old days, people would think that the heuristic should be very fast to compute. Okay, what kind of heuristics have you thought about in your class? You know, for example, did you do like a search, a star search kind of a project? The kinds of, if you were doing like a 15 puzzle problem, the kind of heuristic you might have done would be number of misplaced tiles, okay, or the Manhattan distance. All of these are extremely cheap to compute, extremely cheap to compute, okay? And people would normally only try that sort of heuristic, and here is a very interesting curve that you want to keep in mind. I can write. Okay. So if you are talking about the cost of heuristic, the amount of time you spent computing the heuristic per node in the search, okay, you can do nothing at all. You can actually spend very little time computing the heuristic. Basically not compute heuristic at all. That would be zero cost. Or you could actually solve the problem for the node. So for example, for the 15 puzzle problem, take the node that you whose heuristic you're trying to compute, actually call your own program for that node. Solve it from there. Take the length of the plan. Take the length of the shortest solution. Use that as a heuristic for the higher level search. That would be called what heuristic? perfect heuristic. Okay? Now, computation of perfect heuristic would be exponentially hard. In fact, it's worse than computing a single problem, because in trying to compute the perfect heuristic, you're solving all 15 puzzle problems, most of the 15 puzzle problems in doing that. Okay? So this is the heuristic cost. And if you take for each of the heuristics, how much is for that particular heuristic, using that particular heuristic, how much is the time you spent in actually doing the search? What do you think the search cost would look like? It would sort of look like this. Right? The less time you spend, you don't have any heuristic, you spend a humongous amount of time doing search. And if you have perfect heuristic, you spend very little time doing search. Now, the total time that you have is the time for the heuristic plus the time for the search. Right? It's not like a separate pocket for heuristic and a separate pocket for search. Right? So, what you're really looking for is the summation curve. So, for each x-axis, you have to add up this time and this time and write that curve. Yeah. And that curve would look like what? If I add these two curves, how would that curve look like? It would look sort of like this. Right? Okay? All of the holy grail in combinatorics is finding this point. Okay? If you find the point where the amount of time you are spending in the heuristic computation plus the amount of time you spend on the search winds up being minimum. Anybody can minimize the heuristic computation by not doing heuristic computation. Anybody can minimize the search by doing perfect heuristic. The question is, where is this magic point? And obviously, for normal problems, you don't know where this magic point is. What's interesting is that people in the old days of AI, people sort of assumed that this curve would be more or less like this. I'm only talking about the total size curve. If you believe that for most problems the curves would be like this, would you spend more time or less time? Would you look for simple heuristics, which are easy to compute, or heuristics that will take a long time to compute, cheaper ones? And so they would believe this, and so they will look for example, for 8 puzzle, for the 15 puzzle, you know, I would compute number of misplaced tiles, and my friend would compute Manhattan distance heuristic. Both of us are essentially really cheapo heuristics. And I'll do marginally better than my friend. And one of the things that has become clear in combinatoric problems in general in AI is, for many problems, actually, this could be much farther away. So you, in fact, the minimum is likely to happen when you spend a lot more time in the heuristics. You understand that? Now, this is the sort of thing that slowly dawns on people. So people would try only simple heuristics, and they were thinking, well, I did try slightly better than my friends, and so whatever I got is the best I can do. So that's what was happening here. Okay. In planning too, in fact, people would do very simple heuristics of the kind of misplaced tile heuristic. So here is the idea. Suppose my goal state that I have, that I'm trying to compute, is G1, G2, etc., G3. G1, G2, G3. Okay? And I started from the initial state, and I did some progression. There are a bunch of states in the leaf node, right? And suppose this one is A1, G1, A5, A7. And this one is A1, G1, G2, A5. And this one is A1, G3, A5, G2. Okay? So you could do the obvious thing, which is compute the number of goals that are missing from each of these states. Okay? So you would say that for this one, the number of goals missing is 2, so its heuristic cost is 2. Number of goals missing here is 1, so the heuristic cost is 1. And number of goals missing here is 1, so the heuristic cost is 1. This is just as earth-shaking as your misplaced tile heuristic, the number of misplaced tiles, compute all of them. Right? Now this part of heuristics has been tried, and those are the ones that gave that sort of pretty sad happy curve. Okay? Now, why is this a bad idea for planning? Because suppose I have two goals, and let me think of the easy two goals. So to get the Nobel Prize and, you know, go to Stockholm and get the Nobel Prize, I should be having a talk, and then I should also get the Nobel Prize. Those are the two things. Those are the two goals. Most of you, at least some of you, probably already have the talk. Okay? Very few of you have done Nobel Prize quality work. What you're talking about is the guy who has the talk is just as far away from getting the Nobel Prize as the guy who has actually done the Nobel Prize quality work, but, you know, he's a professor and only has t-shirts, hasn't yet bought a talk. You're saying both of these guys are pretty much same distance away from the goal state. Beautifully done. Okay? The only way you can figure out which goal really is harder to achieve and which goal is easier to achieve is if you were to do the planning, if you simulate how long it would take to actually achieve one of these goals. Okay? So what we will do is we will start doing analysis of reachability. So given some state I am in, how much work do I need to do to reach a state which has another property? That's what I want to do. Okay? To do this, and basically to motivate this, let's look at some slightly higher level discussion. One is that let's think of two notions called reachability and relevance. Okay? Given a problem I and G, where I is the initial state, G is the goal state, and then there are a bunch of actions, a partial state S is called reachable if there is a sequence, some sequence A1 to AK of actions, which when executed from state 1 would lead you to a state that satisfies S. That's when you say S is reachable. Okay? And then relevance is, given a problem IG, a state S is called relevant if there is a sequence A1, A2, AK of actions which when executed from S will take you to the goal state. Okay, this state is relevant because there's a way of going from this state to the goal state. This state is reachable because there's a way of coming from the initial state to this state. In the eventual plan, every state that you actually visit has to be both reachable and relevant. Okay, and so to some extent, what you're trying to do is, in doing heuristics, you're trying to assess reachability and relevance information. Okay. Now, for progression, notice that progression sort of generates states that are reachable from the initial state. So if I'm starting from the initial state and generated more and more children states, there is no point in asking, are they reachable? Of course, they're all reachable. What's more important is which of those states in the search fringe are relevant? Which of them are more relevant than others? For regression, exactly the opposite. You started from the goal state, so all the states that you're generating are the relevant states. And what matters is which are the ones that are actually reachable from the initial state. So basically, both relevance and reachability, you can think of relevance really as reachability from the goal state, modulo some approximation. In fact, the major approximation is that goal state is not a single state. As I said, goal state is really sets of states. But if you can, you know, act as if goal state is a single state, then relevance is nothing but reachability from the goal state. Okay? What this means now is I can just keep talking about reachability analysis. And if I can tell you how to do reachability analysis, you can use that information to either help progression planners or help regression planners. Okay? So that's what we are trying to do. So the heuristic that we're going to compute will try to use reachability analysis. Okay. Here is my favorite way of computing reachability. So reachability is the following specific problem. Okay, given the initial state and another state, given a particular state that I give you, let's say it's G5, G7, G9, how many steps do you need to take from the initial state to reach this state? That's the reachability information. If I give you that information, then you can use it to actually support either progression or regression planner. Okay, so the question is, how do I compute the reachability information? Well, reachability information is very easy if you just do the entire progression tree, okay, and find the first level at which the state that you are looking for is appearing. And then the number of levels that you have traveled is the length of number of actions that you did, okay. So reachability can always be computed just by doing the entire progression. That's essentially like doing heuristic by doing the problem and then using it for solving the base level problem. It's a dumb idea, but you should know. I mean, it's just as dumb an idea as this, not doing any heuristic. But you need to know the extreme so that you can come to the middle point. Okay. So this is perfect information about reachability. Progression will give you perfect reachability information. Okay, but it's as costly as planning. In fact, it's more costly than planning. You know, in terms of worst case scenario, it's just as costly as planning. But in terms of actual clock time, you're likely to spend way more time, because one of the most interesting things that you have to remember is heuristic has to be defined for how many states. Now, this is all background stuff. For every state. This is a very important piece of information that you should know. Every heuristic has to be defined for every state. So if you're using this idea to compute the heuristic, then you are actually going to find the shortest plan to every state in the world, every reachable state in the world. And then after you've done that, then, you know, the actual problem you're trying to solve is really, you know, a fraction of the cost of whatever you just solved. And thankfully, in fact, one of the ideas is, if you did do this, as long as your initial state doesn't change, you can remember these numbers in one big table. And whenever a new goal state comes, you just look up the answer, because the heuristic is already there. The reachability, perfect reachability information is there. Okay. So however, you know, as far as we are concerned, it's while perfect reachability, it's really as costly as planning. And so you don't want to do this. Okay. So what we want is approximate reachability analysis. Now, you remember from the heuristics discussion in A-Star Search that where do heuristics come from? Where do they live? How do you get heuristics? What? What is that? Yes, removing constraints. So what does that mean? It's basically relaxing the problem. Relax the problem and solve it. And the number that you get for the relaxed problem is likely to be an approximate number for the real problem. Okay, heuristics are bought by approximations and heuristics are bought by relaxation. So what I'm trying to tell you here essentially is a reasonable way of doing relaxation for reachability analysis, which seems to have worked extremely well. Okay, and the reason I bought all this stuff about these curves is, As I teach you about how the heuristics are computed, at various points during the lecture, you might start wondering, you know, it seems as if the actual problem is simpler than the heuristics that he's trying to teach me. Okay? And what I'm trying to ask you to remember is, all that, the heuristics may be complex as long as this trade-off works out. And the proof of the fact that this trade-off works out is in the pudding of empirical analysis that I have pointed out. You know, current planners are way faster than the old planners, and they do this, and the other guys didn't do this. Okay? Okay, so my idea is this. Instead of, this is your progression tree. This will give you perfect reachability analysis. What if I have a structure like this, okay? This structure is actually very much connected to this structure. All it is doing is, notice that these are all different states, PQ, PR, PS. What I did was, I just removed the cell membrane between the states, and I union all of them. So I have PQRS here. It's a union of states. So initial state, of course, is a single state. And from then onward, for each level, I just have union of states. And it's not a state. It's not a state at all. What it is the union of the real states that appear in this level. Okay? And so, and then this one is the union of all the states that appear in this level. In fact, actually what I would say is that these are called, this whole structure is called the planning graph. Okay? And I just call it planning graph. And each of these levels are called proposition lists. And a proposition list is really nothing but a union of the real states that exist. In fact, the actual guarantee I would give you is the proposition list here is going to be a superset. It's a superset of all the states that appear at that level. What that means is if there is a state here, it's made up of P and R, you will definitely find a P and R here. Now suppose, for now at this point, you don't know whether this is easier to compute or not. There's always a dumb way of computing this, which is compute this and then convert it into this. If I'm doing this, I'm wasting your time. Okay? It turns out it's much cheaper to compute this. I'll show that to you in a minute. Okay? Way much cheaper to compute this than this. This is polynomial time, this is exponential, this is search. Okay? However, the first question I want to ask yourself, you want to ask yourself is, what good is this? Okay? If I have a state, if I'm looking to see how far is a state RT from initial state, a state RT from initial state, okay? I will look at the proposition list. Is there an R and a T here? No. So it's not achievable in zero length blank. Is there an R and a T? R is here, no T. So it's not also achievable in a one length blank. I come here. Is there an R and a T here? Yes, R is here, T is here. So I would say that it's achievable in a two-length plan. Am I right with respect to the real problem up there? Is there a state which has R and a T in any of these states? No. But I did get a lower bound. I did get a lower bound. Okay, so if my state exists in the proposition list in level k, then I can say that it will take at least k steps to achieve that state from the initial state. At least. Now, how good a lower bound is this? Well, it can be infinitely worse off. It might say k steps, and actually I might need infinite number of steps. That means there is no way of actually generating that. But you remember that the whole thing about making heuristics better and better is to make this lower bound information come closer and closer to the perfect heuristic. Okay? So that was my deal. Now, while these guys will only give me the lower bound information if the state is present, they do give me perfect information if what I'm looking for is not present. So I can give you guarantee that there is no plan in the world which can do R and T in one step. There's no way. You see? So in fact, it sort of gives perfect unreachability information and it gives lower bound reachability information. Which is not bad, if you think about it. Okay? So this is what I'm going to use. This is called my planning graph. I'll compute this for each of my states. Okay? And then for each of my states, I compute it. So here is the basic idea for doing this sort of analysis for progression. So I'm still having G1, G2, etc., G3. G1, G2, G3 is my goal state. And suppose these are my three states in the fringe. I'll compute a basic planning graph for this. I'll compute a big planning graph for this. I'll compute a big planning graph for this state. In each of these states, I will, in each of these planning graphs, I will see what is the level at which G1, G2, G3 appears here. Let's say this is 4, this is 7, this is 3. And I'll say this guy is better. At least his H value is 3. And then, of course, the G value is this path, and G plus H is your F value. Now, you can see why I had to do this, because it looks like I'm doing a lot of analysis compared to a simple call to misplaced tile heuristic or a simple call to Manhattan distance heuristic. I'm computing an entire planning graph for each state. Now, the tricky question is the following. First of all, I kind of did this to two levels here. Do I ever get to stop? How far am I supposed to grow this thing? Now, to answer that, I have to tell you if there is an obvious way of computing this planning graph that doesn't depend upon me having computed this upfront. Because if it depends on this being computed, I'm dead. Okay? Now, it turns out that there is indeed an obvious way of computing this structure. All you're doing is, in essence, start from a state, apply all the actions in parallel. Okay? And so apply in the following sense. If an action A1 can be put in this level, if all its preconditions are present in this level. If so, then all its effects will be listed here. Never mind that if I'm doing A1 and A2, A2 is killing the preconditions of A1. All that stuff I ignore. For each action, I act as if it can be done by itself. Okay, and then I say, I will put an action if in the previous proposition level, its preconditions are present. Just present in the set inclusion. If so, then in the next proposition, I'll put this action in. I'll put a link from all the preconditions to this action, incoming links. And then I'll put an outgoing link from this action to all its effects in the next level. Now, these effects could be negative effects, positive effects, everything. You should have all of them listed. Okay? That's it. And then, so at this level, I try to write all the actions parallelly, and I always consider not doing anything as a useful thing to do. So I'll always consider for each of these conditions, I will say, I can always take that condition and not do anything, and so it will, you know, stay into the next level. And you need to do that because in progression two, you don't have to do, I mean, one of the actions is not do anything, in which case the previous state just comes to the next state. Okay? So the only thing that you have to understand in terms of growing this graph really is you will always consider each action you would pick and put it in the proposition level. I mean, this is called the action level. You'll put it in the action level if its preconditions are present in the previous level, in which case its effects will now be present in the next level. And you do it, you act these are set. And so if there are multiple copies of P, you just have one P, and everybody who is giving P would have a link to them. And if there are multiple things that this P is supporting, there will be multiple links from it to everybody. Okay? The only small change is not only do you consider the normal actions that are present in your domain, you also consider for every state variable, and we are thinking of Boolean state variables, for every state variable, you will make two dummy actions called persist the state variable to be true and persist the state variable to be false. The persist state variable, so if you have a condition P, then you have persist P, which says P must be true before it, and it will give P to be true after it. And persist not P says not P must be true before it, and it will give you not P back. That's planning graph. The question is the following. As I keep growing this graph, will I ever come to a point where there's no point in growing it any further? Yeah. Because at some point of time, in the worst case, all the literals and their negations are present in a particular proposition level. After that, nothing new is going to happen. Many a time, actually, you don't even need to go up to that. as soon as two proposition levels are identical, set-wise identical, that means nothing new has come between two proposition levels, you can stop at that point, because nothing new is going to come afterwards, right? If nothing has changed between here and here, that means no new action which is not here is going to be here. So you can stop. This is called the level of condition. And the simplest idea is to grow these graphs, each of these graphs to level off. That means the last two levels essentially are the same. Okay? And then look for the level at which the goal state is appearing. That will give you the number of the heuristic cost. And you throw this into the mix with the G value. Yes, sir.
Do we still have to go to the last stage where we have all the elements, or we can stop where we find the goal state? And if we find the goal state before...
That's a very good question. It turns out, first of all, this is a very big safety net I provide you, which is, this is a heuristic. You can screw up majorly in computing heuristic. What's the worst that can happen to you? Your search will be a little longer. It's not like you're going to get project, you know, being graded and saying that you got wrong code. Okay. Remember, we got here having tried such great ideas as set difference heuristic, which is totally wrong. Okay. So the first thing I want you to remember, and put it in the, you know, prominently in the back and front of your head, is it's fail safe. You know. You know, of the two things you are trying, both of them will work. One may be faster than the other. It's not a life and death question in terms of whether the plan would be correct. It is which is likely to be faster. Okay? And the answer as to which is likely to lead to plans faster is a harder answer. It turns out that in fact you could try, in fact, one of the most popular implementations of a progression planner called FF, which is it's called fast forward. And what it does really is it grows the planning graph to the level where the top level goals that you are looking for are already present, and then stops there. Okay, and you know it does fine. Okay, now if you go forward, you can get better estimates of heuristics potentially, but if you can always, all that matters is the total amount of time you spend. And FF does quite well. Nobody has actually looked at that specific issue of should I go all the way to level up versus should I stop at the goal level. I think in fact people have looked at it, and the answer is the accuracy of the heuristic will reduce if you stop earlier, but the speed of planning improves much more, and more often than not, the solutions that you came up with are just as good as the ones that you came up with if you did the full level up.
So if we go ahead with moving ahead of this point, and if the goal state changes, then it will be helpful. Else if they are static, then computing to the point where we get the goal state is quite enough for the whole problem
to have. I'll try to give you an example as to why there may be states that might come afterwards that might be relevant. Okay. Here is the reason, actually, I think you can keep this in mind in this way. What you are getting are lower bounds. Okay? Now, it's actually possible that from this level, from here, the goal is truly 15 steps away, and your lower bound said 6. Okay? It is possible that the lower bounding inaccuracy is dependent on where the nodes are, and you know, if you use the farther one, at least some of the intermediate nodes, not the goal node, might have had different accuracy. I'll try to give you an example later on, not now. Okay. So, basically this is projection, this is optimistic projection. And you're using optimistic projection to compute the approximate reachability. And you use that in actual planning. And for this very simple case of have cake and eat it too, ignore these curved lines for now. In fact, I'm making your life much simpler. The curved lines are these mutual exclusions. You don't even need to know that. Till now, I never talked to you about mutual exclusions. Okay? all I'm doing is, this is the initial level, and he put in an action that is applicable. Each action that's applicable in the previous level has been put in here, and its effects are put in here. Okay, completely ignore the cut. Okay. And then, so he gets the next level here, and then he grows that one more level. And these are the persistence actions. All they do is they take, there is one persistence for each literal, obviously. And what that is, they have cake, you can take it, have cake, and not eat cake, will become eat cake, not eat cake. That's it. That's all he did there. Okay? And if you don't believe me, that this really does correspond to the optimist, the you know, in optimistic version of this, here is the actual states that appear for this step, that problem, if you were to generate the entire progression tree. And you can convince yourself that the union of these, I mean, these two are present here. So this is indeed a superset of the union of those. And those three are present here. That's all I need to show you. And is it clear to people that growing this is way cheaper than growing this? Is it clear to you that growing this is exponentially cheaper than growing this? It may not be, but you should make sure that you understand that. Okay? And furthermore, you know when to stop. So in this particular case, have cake, not have cake, not have cake, eaten cake, eaten cake, not eaten cake, not eaten cake. Is there any point in going forward from here? Nothing. Nothing has changed between the last two levels. And you went from here to here because there are only two here and there are four here. So very simple. Okay. Now, if you were to do the blocks world, basically, you know, the planning graphs would look much uglier. Okay. This was the easiest problem that he could think of where he could draw the planning graph on a sheet. The graph planning graph problems are the worst problems for homework, okay? And if I just give you even reasonable size problem and say just compute, write the planning graph on a piece of paper, you would go crazy and you would think you are better off with set difference heuristic than this nonsense. But what's hard for you may be very easy for your computer. Okay. So if for this blocks wall problem, remember we were looking at you know, not clear B and hand empty as the goal, and the initial state was like that. You have a scenario where you start with this and you put in all these actions, and it turns out that in fact, when you look back at this afterwards, I may even have skipped some of the actions that I should have put in. Okay, it was hard enough for me, and so, but it's very easy for computer to just loop through all the actions and checking each of them which are applicable and putting them in. How hard is that? Okay. So, and then by this time, it looks nice and happy like this. And it has not leveled off. So I have to do one more level, and I ran out of space. And this is a classic homework problem, because homework, you should go crazy doing it. And realize that And this is one of the reasons why I had to do that, because it looks as if you're doing too much work for heuristic compared to the kind of heuristic that you looked at. Have you guys thought of things like pattern databases when you did heuristics? Have you ever till now looked at a heuristic for search which takes longer time to explain than the original problem? Because missing tiles heuristic was too easy. And Manhattan distance, yeah, it's too easy. Good heuristics can take some time to explain. And all that matters is that they're easier to compute than the original full problem. Okay. Okay, so that's how this particular graph looks. And again, if you're looking to see whether or not something is there, you just look to see whether it's present in a particular level and the length that the index where that particular thing appears can be seen as the number of, as the index can still be seen as a heuristic cost. Okay. So, if you have a single literal, okay, so now what I'll do is the following. If my goal state is just G1, it's clear that I will find, actually in fact, so let me just do this. Okay. So until now, I sort of gave you one obvious reasonable thing to do to compute the cost of goals, say G1, G2, G3 with respect to each of the planning graphs, which is find the first level where they're all appearing together. Now actually, what I would do is, that is really this middle thing in this slide. This is called the set level heuristic in the book. Okay? I will tell you two more just so that you can compare and contrast and, you know, get a better feel for how you, you know, what are the issues in computing these kinds of heuristics. One idea is you could say that the cost of the goal set P, Q and R is the cost of P plus cost of Q plus cost of R. Okay? Now if P and Q both appear in the second level for the first time, then by this way you would wind up saying the cost is 2 plus 2, 4. Whereas if you did it this way, you would say that their cost is 2. Okay? Now, remember heuristics. What were some of the properties of heuristics that one cares about? Yeah. Which of these will never overestimate? The first and the second, which is guaranteed not to overestimate? And when I say not overestimate, they should never, ever, not even for a single state, overestimate. The admissibility criterion, which is what overestimate is all about, is a for all condition, for all nodes in the state. The true cost of that state, that node, is greater than or equal to what the heuristic says is the cost of that state. Okay, so can we, for example, this one, is that always going to be an underestimate? No, because suppose the same action A gives both P and Q, right? Then you are counting A twice. So you overestimate it. Out. Out you go. Okay. Now, have you thought about this picture? These are the nodes. H value for different H function, okay? This is the perfect heuristic. I just made it up. Okay? What does an admissible heuristic do? All it does is it's somewhere below. That's the admissible heuristic. Okay? What about this? Is that heuristic admissible? If your life depended on it, which would you rather use? The black one, I mean, this H2 or H1, which would you rather use? Admissibility is a very coarse property. What matters is how good is the heuristic able to capture the trends in the cost with respect to the nodes. Hey, remember that you can always get a beautiful admissible heuristic, which is the x-axis, which says H equal to 0. Okay? So, given this, you shouldn't be surprised that while this is admissible, and this is obviously inadmissible, if you were to run both of these, for most problems, the planner would actually get done faster with that heuristic than this. Okay. However, there is no guarantee that the solution it gives is optimal in terms of number of steps. Now, I made it sound as if this level heuristic is a loser like this guy, which is way too low. So the question that I want to ask myself is, what are the conditions under which the level heuristic is actually going to be much lower than the real cost? And that would happen If, for example, you know, I have P1 all the way up to PN, I mean G1 all the way up to GN, and G1 to G100, okay? each of them are being given by A1 to A100. So G1 only will be given by A1, G2 will only be given by A2, G3 will only be given by A3, and so on. And none of them have any preconditions. In that case, what would be the level at which G1 to G100 would be present in the planning graph? Very first level. You see this? I have 100 actions, none of them have any preconditions, so they are applicable in any state. So they are applicable in the initial state. They'll get applied and give you G1 up to G100. Okay? And so, now you would say that the cost of the state G1 to G100 is 1. What is its real cost in terms of number of actions? 100. I can make it bigger if you want. I can make it 1000. You know, I will say G1 to G1000, A1 to A1000, they will still come in the first level. The problem with level heuristic basically is that it can significantly undercount the number of actions. Now, what I should really be doing is find an approximate solution for my problem. Level is not an approximate solution to the problem. Level is a good way of estimating the length of the approximate solution, but why not just find the approximate solution? One idea that would have worked in my case where I had G1 to G100, right, in the very first level, is find the subgraph of the planning graph which supports all the goals that I need. So each G1 needs to be supported by an action. Each GI needs to be supported by an action. Okay? So if I find the subgraph of the planning graph which covers my goals and count the number of actions in that subgraph, that will give me the length of the plan, which will be an approximate length because I'm ignoring actions being interacting with each other and I'm saying everything can be done parallel to each other. But I'm at least counting different actions different times. Okay, so as good as it looks as if this is a great idea, it turns out it is a better idea, which is just compute the relaxed plan, which is a subgraph of the planning graph. That's what we do. Okay, so the basic idea would be if I have a planning graph like this, and if my goal state really is HB and on table B, then what I need to do really is I need to find a subgraph of this graph structure which such that this guy is supported by some action, that guy is supported by some action, and once the actions are in, their preconditions have to be supported in the previous level. Okay? And so you do the same thing recursively at this level. So for example, if I decided to support this guy by this action, then now this guy has a precondition HB, which then needs to be supported at that level. So that needs to come into the graph. Now by this time, of course, since this is the first level, you don't need to do anything further. So a relaxed plan computation is really finding a subgraph of the planning graph recursively, starting from the goals. Pick actions for, you know, one action for each goal. One action for each goal. And then the moment you do that, you have gotten into a recursion where the union of the preconditions of the actions become the goal state for the previous level. And you just do this recursion and it'll tail out at the first level. Okay? So if you were to do, this is just to show that if you had something like HEN not clear B, here is a subgraph of this structure which starts from here, goes through actions, ends here. The green one is a subgraph. So in fact, one of the interesting points is every valid plan is a subgraph of the planning graph. Every valid plan is a subgraph of the planning graph. That's a unidirectional statement. Opposite is not true. Every subgraph of a planning graph is not a plan. A subgraph can be just a single node, right? So every valid planning, every valid plan for the solution, including the real solution, is a subgraph of the planning graph. Okay, and in particular, in the relaxed planning graph, in fact, the one that we have looked at till now, where you don't consider the interactions between actions, okay, that's called, it's been called the relaxed planning graph. And that's the one that you looked at till now. And finding a subgraph of this graph is very easy. Okay. Because why? No backtracking is needed. If all you are interested in doing is finding a subgraph that starts at the goal and set the initial state, you don't have to ever backtrack. Search is hard only when you have to backtrack. If you don't have to backtrack, it doesn't matter how much is the branching factor, how much is the whatever. Now, the no backtracking needed is actually is an interesting question. It turns out that if I want to find the optimal subgraph, which has the least number of real actions in it, that is theoretically NP-hard. So finding the optimal relaxed plan for my problem is still NP-hard. But I'm just doing heuristic, and don't get on my case, so I would not do optimal. Okay, I'll do greedy. In fact, there are many, many subgraphs, and I'll do a greedy thing. The greediness that I do is the following. What I'll do is I will try to pick actions to support goals such that the fewest actions are picked at each level. So for example, if I picked a goal and used an action to support it, and another goal is being picked, I'll see if the already picked action gives this goal too. If so, I won't put in a new action. Do you understand what I'm saying? If I do that, then in essence, if there are actions, let's say if there is an action which supports both HB and NTB, I would have just picked that one action at that level. So I would have avoided overcounting actions. Okay? But at the same time, you also avoid undercounting actions, because for each goal which needs a different action, you actually count it. This is called relaxed plan heuristic. So what you're doing here is not only do you do computation of these planning graphs for each of the states, you would then find a subgraph starting from here for supporting G1, G2, G3 and count the number of real actions in it. The reason I keep saying real actions is there are dummy actions. They don't count for anything. The persist actions are not real actions. All I need to count are the real actions. That would be the actual length of the plan. So I compute the length here, length here, length here, and whichever has the higher length is the bad one. Whichever has the lower length is the good one. So now I have told you three different ways of getting a number. All heuristic is a real number, right? I have told you three different ways of generating real numbers, saying these are heuristic values for a node. One is add up these three numbers for P, Q, and R. The other is take the level. The third is relaxed plan. Okay, and you should understand that this, between these two, this actually performs well, and you need to understand that that is possible. Nothing in the theory says just because this guy is admissible, he should do better than this guy. And what's more interesting is relaxed plan length heuristic, which is this. Is this admissible? Is this admissible? I actually gave you the answer just now, so you should know. If the way I'm computing relaxed plan is the way I'm computing relaxed plan, would it be admissible? Optimal length plan is actually NP-hard, and I'm not doing optimal. Okay? So I could still be overestimating. Mostly I underestimate. Relaxed plan. See, there are two reasons to this relaxed plan heuristic. In most cases is likely to be like considerably below the real heuristic because it's ignoring the negative interactions between actions. But it's also possible that in some cases it overestimates. Because if certain goals don't have any negative interactions and I didn't compute the optimal plan for supporting them, just ignoring interactions, then I would, in that particular node, I would have overestimated. If I screw up for one node, I lose my badge. I no longer am admissible. So a relaxed plan heuristic is not admissible. It can actually lead you to inoptimal solutions. But who cares? You know, I mean, at least you'll get a problem solution. Okay. So this is what this thing is saying. H level is lower than or equal to H relax. H independent is larger than or equal to H level. H level is admissible. H relax is not admissible at all. I mean, it's not admissible because we are not computing the optimal relaxed plan. Okay. I just told you the specific heuristic technique that's used by one of the planners that basically set the standard for speed. This is FF, fast forward. And it's just, you know, blazingly fast. And you guys should try it. Especially if you actually write your own little set difference heuristic planner and wait for 3 days to solve a four action solution and then give it to FF. You'll see how fast it is. Okay? So this, I don't know why this is. Okay, so this is actually, this is sort of showing that for each node, you compute a planning graph differently. And you know, my student made this thing for his proposal last week, and I just copied it. I would never make such painful animation. Okay, we are very, so we actually just figured out how to do a relaxed plan for normal planning action, normal planning problems, right? I want to ask you a slightly different question. What if the actions have non-uniform costs? All I have been doing till now is assuming that each action is one unit costly. It's very, very reasonable to have actions have different costs. Some actions can have 2,000 units cost, some actions can have, you know, 1 unit cost. So how would you extend this idea of planning graph-based relaxed plan heuristics if you have non-uniform cost? The reason I'm doing this basically is the textbook doesn't have it, but the reason I'm doing this is it's so easy, and it seems as if there should be a corollary for going through this entire lecture. And this is a simple corollary, okay? The simple corollary is, of course, I can ignore the cost, okay? And if actions have non-uniform costs, okay, what I could do is I could scale up the action such that the lowest cost action is 1 unit cost, and then just use whatever I told you until now. That would still be a lower bound. That would still be a lower bound. Okay? But nobody wins by ignoring information that's given to them. So much more reasonable thing is to propagate cost information over the planning graph. Okay, and what this opens up is now, as long as you have these planning graph structures in front of you, you can propagate additional information over the edges. And that could be, in fact, there's one time I gave this talk called 1001 Ways of Skinning a Planning Graph for Heuristic Pleasure and Profit. And it turns out there are like a million different things you can propagate over these planning graphs. And here is one, just to show you what else can be propagated. And so, suppose action A1 has cost 4, it's somewhere in the middle of the, let's see, what am I doing here? Okay, yeah, so these are action levels, okay? So action A1 has a cost 4, A2 has a cost 5, A3 has a cost 6, okay? Now, if P is given by both A3 and A1, what is P's cost? What I need to do is, I have cost here, I need to have a way of propagating the cost. What is P's cost? Whatever is the cheaper cost. If two people can give me, and one guy gives in 4 units, one guy gives in 6 units, I'll take 4 units. So the propagation of the cost here is min of the possibility. Simple enough. Okay? And similarly, Q has only one guy supporting it, so its cost is 5. Okay? Now, here is A4, which is an action which has precondition P as well as precondition Q. Okay? And just to do the action A4, I need to spend 3 units. Plus, to be able to do the action X, precondition should be true. And in making the precondition true, I already encountered this much of cost. So what's the total cost of A4? The total cost of A4 would be whatever is the cost to execute this action, which is 3 units, plus some function of its precondition cost. Now, what is the function of precondition cost? Is it the sum? Is it the minimum? Is it the maximum? We definitely know it's not minimum. It makes no sense. If there are two preconditions, one is costlier than the other, and you need both, then it cannot be minimum. You can start with max. And if you do max, then the cost that you estimate here would be an actual lower bound on a real cost. Okay? But is an actual lower bound on the real cost. And what I would do, in fact, remember the level heuristic? Okay? It turns out that this is a useful thing to just do this. You can think of what level heuristic is doing as the max of H of P, H of Q, H of R. Do you guys see that? This is a nice homework problem. PQR level, the first level where P and Q and R would be appearing together, is the maximum of the first level where P alone appears, Q alone appears, R alone appears. And whoever is the last guy to join would join the party already in progress. Because once you come into the planning graph, you don't ever go out. Right? Planning graph is a monotonic structure. That was the reason it levels up. So in fact, H lev is also H max heuristic. H independent is also H sum heuristic. It adds up numbers. This one takes maximum of all the numbers. Okay. So once you realize that taking maximum is a reasonable thing, I could do the maximum here too. Maximum of 514. And it would have as nice a property as the level heuristic previously, which is that it is admissible, but it's pretty slow because level heuristic wasn't what we actually used finally. And indiscriminately adding is better. Okay, because I said that compared to level heuristic, the H int did better normally. And so it's reasonable here to also say 4 plus 5, 9. The right way to do it would be actually to find the cheapest cost plan for supporting P and Q here and add that number here. That would be a relaxed plan. Just finding a relaxed plan from just for this part of the planning graph. For this part of the planning graph. So for P, whatever is the cheapest action I can pick. For Q, if there is an action that has already been picked for P, which also supports Q, I'll use that. So there is H lev, there is H int, and then there's also this recursive find the relaxed plan thing. Now, if I want to do the relaxed plan thing, this propagation itself becomes painful. That's why I'm just doing max or sum. Okay? Now, if I do that, I will now have a planning graph which has numbers associated with all the propositions at each level. Now, I can then use on that cost-oriented planning graph the cost of my goal state. And the simplest thing would be to find a subgraph of this cost-oriented planning graph which will support these goals. Okay, and in fact, that makes it very clear. We can compute a relaxed plan to support the literals at the last level. Okay, now in doing this, you realize that there are multiple actions that can support each of these goals, and you have to find the right set of actions that will wind up supporting it in the cheapest way possible. And you can actually see in this case that optimal relaxed plan is NP-hard. You may not have seen it earlier, but you can see it here very easily because there are lots of possible combinations. Once again, I can try a greedy approach, just the way I did there. And then the greedy approach is support the goals using the actions that have the lowest propagated cost while taking into account the possibility of supporting other guys with things that have already been picked up. Okay, the greediness can be more greedy, less greedy. And the less and less greedy you become, the more optimal you become. Okay. Now, one last thing about this, and then you get to go home, now that you have cost, when do you stop growing the planning graph? When do you stop growing the planning graph? You can't just stop as soon as two layers are equal. Why? Because two layers could be equal, but the cost could be different between the two layers. Now, furthermore, one of the problematic things is it actually possible that as you grow the planning graph, the cost associated with a proposition can actually fall down? So suppose I have a proposition, P came here with a cost 4. Can I be sure that this is the cheapest cost P will ever have? Or if I keep growing the planning graph, I might actually get P with cheaper cost. It turns out it actually can happen that growing the planning graph, you can get a cheaper cost plan. So for example, there may be a single action of 10,000 units cost, which is right away applicable in the initial state and will give you whatever you want. And there are the cheapo student level actions which will, you know, take 20 of them, which will give you the same effect. And so the 20 actions one after other, because each of them depend on the effects given by the previous action, they will appear in the 20th level in the planning graph. Okay? And at that point, the thing that I'm trying to support will have much lower cost than what it had earlier. So one of the neat things that happens, I mean neat if you like some sort of difference from the previous kind of planning graph, is if you think of cost, cost is essentially falling down. It can fall down as the levels increase, which means actual level off is much more painful to define for this graph. But it's okay, because as I told you, it's a heuristic. So if you screw up, all that will matter is, you know, the solution would be slightly off. I mean, they will never be wrong. It may be less optimal. Okay? So in fact, one thing that you could do is, I'll say, you know, I feel like growing it for 15 levels. Or I feel like doing this guy's thing. I will grow until the goals come, and then I will do 2 more levels. You know, why 2 more levels? You know, I just don't want to be too lazy. I want to act as if I'm kind of serious guy. So I'll do 2 more levels. That's a reasonable thing. Okay? This pretty much covers the way state-of-the-art planners work, state-of-the-art deterministic planners work. There are a million other planners which are all close to the state-of-the-art. They're worth talking about. Okay? For example, we didn't talk about regression planners. And in fact, it turns out that for a regression planner, planning graph heuristic is at once easier as well as harder. It's easier because, I know I'm being nasty, but it's easier because for progression, I would have computed a planning graph for each of the nodes. For regression, remember I'm doing the planning graph from the initial state. All I need to know is which of these states, for each of these states, where is the level at which this appears in the planning graph. So upfront, it looks like regression is way more effective than progression, right? Because you just need one planning graph. One. And I'll tell you next class that while that is the case, and I spent a lot of time trying to make regression work faster than progression, I failed, and I'll explain to you why. It turns out that although it is just one planning graph, you need to do a lot more to that planning graph. What we did here is ignored all the interactions between actions, and you need to start taking into account the mutual exclusions, and even that's not enough. Okay? So the state of the art is the best planners right now are progression planners, which do multiple heuristics, one for each node. And you would not have believed this at all. A, you wouldn't have tried something like a planning graph heuristic because it looks very painful. And B, even if you're trying, you wouldn't have done it one for each when you could get away with this. This is why I think of this lecture as sort of a logical culmination of the search lectures that you heard previously. There's a lot more that AI has figured out than before. Okay. So I'll stop.
Do I have the order to have another lecture from you or no?
Yeah, I could do Wednesday. I'll probably do Wednesday, and then I'll basically just tell you guys some of the stuff that's happening in the non-deterministic planning.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, tie up some of the loose ends. and talk about what happens if you get out of deterministic planning. Okay?
Okay. All right, so yeah, we'll have the honor to have Dr. Rao to have another one.
Sure, thanks.
See you next time. This is very neat stuff, and also, yeah, I'm thinking about like version space and stuff. Very much like
they're connected. They're all good ideas are all welcome.
No, yeah, no, no, it's like it subsumes all these things. Okay. And then that's good.